to episode 133 of the Talk to Contact podcast. I'm Erolf Pleiss, and with me this week is Jay Korn and Cody Christie. And the baseball pirate will be with us momentarily. He's buying some groceries or some shit. Gentlemen, how are you?
Just stellar.
Wow. You guys are enthused. I can feel the energy today.
Woo! That was awesome.
Here, let me see if this perks you up a little bit. Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that. For the listeners out there, we had a bunch of technical difficulties leading up to the beginning of this podcast. For the last half hour, Eric forgot to turn the thing on. Apparently, that was the big problem.
Yep. But I have been drinking beers while I'm fixing this. So, expect Rowdy Roddy Piper tonight.
We wouldn't expect anything else.
That is setting the bar high.
Yeah, pretty high. So, you guys got anything important to tell us, or are we going to jump right into Twins news?
The people came here for the Twins, Eric. Let's do this.
Nobody got married or went camping.
I think we're all...
anything like that.
We're all married. You were the last to join the take that leap. I did not go camping. Nope. I went to graduation on Sunday. That was a party.
Nothing new or exciting to report on this front either.
All right. Well, let's just do Twins news then. So the Twins are, what are they, 11 games over 500 now?
Is that their official record?
So we're recording tonight just after the Twins doubleheader. And so the Twins split the doubleheader today after they won the nightcap. They lost the day game. They lost the previous day's game against the Red Sox. So they just pick up one game. They need a win tomorrow to split. And it's been a struggle for the Twins to score runs in Boston, big time. And that seems like not just the Twins this year. That seems like a Minnesota in Boston problem.
Yeah, they talked about this extensively on the broadcast. Like, if this... Oh, hello.
Oh. Good. I'm glad we got the ringing noise.
Hello.
Paul, how is the store?
Lovely.
Oh, good. Jay was just telling us about the Twins in Boston scoring runs.
Yeah, like if it had held up last year, it would have been like the lowest scoring four-game series in Fenway Park history. They scored one run in the ninth inning or something like that. And then again, the first three games, really, I guess what was it, 5-3 or 6-3 in the day game today, but lots of low-scoring games, lots of pitchers' duels. May out there kind of pitching for a job, I thought, today. It's like what gave Kyle Gibson the big stop and nickname last year. That's what I kind of saw out of May today. He went out there and he stopped the losing streak.
Well, let's back up before we get to May. So on Wednesday, or I'm sorry, it is Wednesday. On Tuesday, Mike Pelfrey went out and pitched 7 innings of one-run ball and ended up losing a 1-0 baseball game because the Twins can't score runs in Boston. And then in the day game today, it was a 6-3 final, but it was 6-1 going into the late innings before an improbable Eduardo Escobar home run to give him a couple runs on the board. So I never felt like they were in that day game. From the get-go, they were in trouble. Phil Hughes had maybe his worst start of the year for sure, maybe one of his worst starts since he's been in Minnesota. And then really when you're just starting to think, oh, the wheels are falling off this Twins team. These are the Twins we thought we were going to have. They're not scoring runs. They're not hitting with men on base. They're not doing any of those little things right. They come out and they get a fantastic performance from Trevor May. Trevor May goes 7 innings. He strikes out 9. What do you have, 1 walk tonight? And then, the bullpen got the job done and the Twins record a shutout for the first time in like half a season of baseball.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping May would go out there for the eighth inning and beyond even. But But Paul's been sticking with that formula. Blaine Boyer, the pretty clear to me, definitely the setup man right now. And then Perkins for his major league leading 19th. So, hey, it worked. I don't think Trevor May is or should go anywhere as far as his spot in the rotation goes.
Yeah, because just going off of that, Jay, tomorrow we will have Tommy Malone starting after his demotion and pretty much dominating the International League during his time at AAA. They haven't made a corresponding roster move yet because they're waiting to see a little bit on Ricky Nolasco. He's got an ankle thing going on. They're going to have him throw a little and see if he needs a DL stint. So there's a little bit of question about who's going to be in this rotation moving forward as we get closer to the weekend. With Malone getting the start on Thursday, they kind of just pushed everyone back a day as far as the rotation goes right now. I think we had Michael Tonkin up for the day today for that extra roster spot, but he'll have to go back down now that the doubleheader is complete today.
What, and I want to back up to this Nolasco piece, because on Sunday, Nolasco pitched in the second inning, and I was at the game, Jay was at the game, but it was tough to see anything happening. But early in the second inning, he pitches, it looks like everything is fine. All of a sudden, the trainer comes out, and all the infielders kind of gather around the mound. Looks like he's injured himself, but then they let him throw a couple pitches. They did have the radar gun going on those test pitches, I guess, and they were regular Nolasco, you know, velocity, high 80s, low 90s, you know, and obviously he wasn't trying to let it fly all the way, so it looked okay. And then next batter got a hit, and the next batter after that, all of a sudden, trainer comes back out and he's done. So it's tough to tell. I think even on the television broadcast, I was trying to get a hold of people who were watching at home, and it sounded like they were speculating about a potential elbow injury. And then later on, late in the game, we heard that it was an ankle injury, that he had rolled over his ankle on a delivery somewhere in that second inning. And now they're babying him, and they're doing this Twins thing. And this doesn't seem to be just a Ron Gardner thing. It seems to be a Twins thing where they're terrified of using the disabled list. And I know with a pitcher, it's not as imperative that you DL a guy right away because you have 5 days before that guy's going to play again. But this is a team that doesn't have a real bench. I mean, you have Nunez, Escobar, Herman, and Shane Robinson are your bench, you know, because you're rolling with a 13-man pitching staff and you got rid of Vargas. So there's no real designated hitter in this roster. And so even if you weren't going to be, you know, use that next pitcher, you could send Nolasco to the DL right away, call up a hitter, then when Nolasco's spot in the rotation comes up, then you can decide, you know, are we going to make a change? Are we going to get, you know, maybe move Stauffer or Dunsing, who've been sucking anyways? You know, what type of move are we going to make here to deal with that? Or you use that 26th man during that doubleheader, which you knew you had coming up, to call up a spot starter and make some kind of adjustment there. I mean, it just seems like waiting until Thursday, which now Nolasco is going to throw a bullpen tomorrow, Thursday, when you're listening to this podcast, and Malone is going to start on Thursday. Before Malone starts, they're then going to make the decision on Nolasco. And if they decide Nolasco is not going on the DL, now you have to option a guy from the bullpen likely anyways. And so you didn't save yourself anything by waiting that week. And if Nolasco goes on the DL, maybe you could have been a little bit more flexible. Maybe you could have found a way to get a hitter into this lineup in Boston when you're struggling to score runs. So I thought it was a little bit interesting that best case scenario is you save yourself one Ricky Nolasco start in the grand scheme of things, and you have the ability to be a little bit more flexible and find a way to get an extra bat on the lineup. And I didn't care for that at all. And I don't know. Did you guys get worked up about that, or is it just me? Am I off my rocker here?
I guess I don't know. It didn't bug me, I guess, a whole bunch. I guess I didn't think too in depth about the depth of that roster move in relation to all the other things that they're going to have to do around it. But I was glad that Malone's going to be up to make the start. But yeah, to me, I think, I don't know. I think last year we saw with Nolasco, you know, him trying to pitch through a lot of crap he shouldn't have been trying to pitch through. And he pitched like junk and then kept pitching like junk and kept trying to pitch through it. And then eventually they had to put him on the DL because he was just pitching that bad. I've read some stuff, you know, that the Twins want him to be, you know, more open with the pitching or with the training staff this year and be open to, you know, those DL stints. So maybe, yeah, it would have made sense, you know, just to give him, you know, 2 weeks on the DL. He's only going to miss, you know, a handful of starts. Make sure he gets right. They have Malone, who's pitching well at AAA, that can come up here. With what they're paying Nolasco, it's not like they're going to, it's not like his rotation spot is in jeopardy if he goes on the disabled list. They're paying him a ton of money, so they're going to have him, once he comes back from the DL, go right back into the rotation. So, I don't know. I guess in the grand scheme of things, it probably would have made more sense just to DL him for now, let him take a couple weeks to get everything back in order, and then he could come back and be healthy and help this team to continue to win.
Well, I mean, even if you just decide DL Nolasco right away, call up whoever the next day's starter is at Rochester, have that guy pitch, bump the rest of your rotation back a day. So now you've pushed off any decision for 6 days, option that guy from Rochester back down when you need to call up, you know, a bat or another guy later, and you know, kind of work it that way. And it just seemed like, I don't know, it seemed like a loss of an opportunity to be a little bit more creative. And the best case scenario is that you've got Ricky Nolasco, who hasn't pitched very well when he hasn't been 100% healthy. And that's essentially the only thing that you're going to get in his next start. So, I don't know. I was frustrated with that. And then today, in between the games of the doubleheader, the Twins made a roster announcement that they were reinstating Oswaldo Arcia from the disabled list, and then they immediately optioned him to AAA. So they essentially said, Oswaldo, great, you're healthy. Now you're getting demoted down to AAA, so stay on that squad. You're no longer on the 25-man roster. You're no longer collecting a big league paycheck. You're no longer accruing big league service time. You're down there in AAA. And this was kind of weird because for me, and my thought was, there's no reason to rush activating Arcia because major league position players have the option to, when they're on a rehab assignment, they have 20 days for that rehab assignment. Today marked the 10th day of Oswaldo Arcia's rehab assignment. So, sure, he was 0 for 11 with a walk or two walks or something in five games or four games with the Red Wings, but you still have 10 more days for his bat to wake up. You know, if a guy hits after early in the rehab start, you bring him up right away. If he doesn't hit, you know, maybe he's a little bit rusty. It's not like Arcia looked totally lost before he was hurt. I mean, if you look at his last 10 games before he went on the disabled list, you know, he looked essentially like the career Oswaldo Arcia, a little bit frustrating, but a guy that is at least league average with the bat for a 24-year-old who has tons of upside. So, I don't know, that was frustrating, and then now you're rolling with this same roster. You have Vargas and Arcia down in AAA, along with Josmeo Pinto, and now you're rolling with Nunez, Escobar, Herman, and Robinson on the bench. Herman's a backup catcher who plays maybe once a week. And then Nunez and Escobar and Robinson, one of those three is in the lineup every single day. Whether you're putting Nunez as a DH and hitting him seventh, or you have Robinson in a corner spot, and then whoever came out of the outfield is DHing. There's no excitement once you get past like the number five hitter at best with this Twins roster. It's just like out at the bottom of the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with Escobar. I mean, being out there every day in some capacity. Another thing that a guy you didn't mention is Danny Santana, and we talked about him last week, but he is struggling. Oh man, it's rough. What he's not having good at bats right now. He goes up there and it's three pitches and he's out, you know, and not making contact and not doing that. He's not having good at bats. It's just, it's terrible to watch. But I mean, out of the guys you talked about that are down at AAA, you know, they're not going to call one of those guys up to replace Santana unless you feel like Escobar can be that everyday shortstop. And then Nunez is the backup shortstop, or that's not a very promising situation either. So yeah, out of, you know, going into this season, we had, you know, Vargas, Arcia, and Pinto penciled in as being some combination of the DH role for the Twins. I doubt many people thought that all three of them would end up being at Rochester at the same time, unless it was for rehab purposes. It's an interesting situation. And I saw Jeremy Nygaard on Twitter said something like, this is going to be a long-term deal for Arcia, like that one of his sources in the organization told him that Arcia should be shopping for an apartment while he's there, because he's not coming back up here for a while, which I thought was pretty telling, I guess, of how they're viewing Arcia right now.
Well, I mean, and there was a piece, so I think Jeremy mentioned this. Arcia is kind of right on the cusp of that Super 2 status. Mm-hmm. And so if he stays on the Major League roster all year long, he's, I guess from the Twins' point of view, in danger of being a Super 2. But if you take him off the DL and it's 10 more days and he comes right back right away, then he's certainly going to miss that Super 2 cutoff. But if it's a scenario where they're saying, find an apartment, you're going to be down there for a while, work on your swing, then all of a sudden these 10 days that they're saving, you know, all it is penny pinching on the part of the Twins. They're going to save, what, $30,000 or $35,000 from the 10 days of a major league salary, you know, and then Arcia gets kind of dicked out of that, and they don't save anything on the back move, on the back end. And if it's just the Twins saying, oh, we want to send a message, but I think you could send that message in 10 days. I mean, it would be the same message. Or you could have a guy talk to him. I mean, I don't think that it's a message not getting through to him that has caused him to struggle or has caused him to not make the changes that the Twins have been asking him to make for the last 3 years. I mean, this is Oswaldo Arcia. Give him a chance to grow and mature. Maybe find a coach that he can connect with, whoever that person is or however that ends up working. But whatever they've been doing, the message they tried to send last year when they did the exact same thing. He was a starter. He got injured. He got healthy. Then they demoted him immediately upon reinstating him. He didn't all of a sudden come back and turn into, you know, Mike Trout. He came back and was Oswaldo Arcia. So I don't know what they're hoping to do differently here in 2015 that didn't work in 2014.
What would you rather? Wouldn't it be better for him to be up here and working with Brunansky? I mean, isn't that why? I mean, Brunansky's got all this praise from these guys for helping, you know, Dozier emerge and some of the other guys that have Plouffe's taken some strides forward under Brunansky. So I feel like you'd want him up here working with the major league coaching staff that are supposed to be, you know, some of the better coaches and doing some of the better things, especially with all the experience that Arcia already has. I mean, unless, yeah, like you said, that they're just viewing it as a way to keep him from that Super 2 status. And I don't know, maybe they saw some stuff in their rehab that they're just not happy with as far as, you know, sometimes his swing can just be a little out of whack, or, I mean, a lot of times it can be out of whack. So maybe they're hoping that, you know, some extended time down there in Rochester, he can find that swing, find some more of that confidence, and then come help this team in the second half of the season.
Well, yeah, and Rochester has been off like 3 of the last 4 days or something like that. They've had some kind of crazy schedule down there due to rainouts and postponements and scheduled off days. So it's not like he's been able to get in a rhythm down there and see live pitching every day as part of this rehab. So that certainly plays a factor too, especially when you're coming back from injury. All of a sudden you're seeing live pitching, then you're not, and then you're not. Now it's a 3 or 4 days before you've seen it, and you're jumping in and out of that. That doesn't help a guy that's kind of trying to come back and figure it out. So, you know, it's frustrating, but if it almost seems like, you know, ignore the contract stuff, ignore whatever it is this the Twins saying, hey, all of a sudden we're going to compete for a postseason spot, and we've been doing it without you for 2 weeks, and we've been finding a way to score runs when we've had Nunez and Escobar and Robinson as our bench bats, as our designated hitters. We've been able to do it so far. Maybe we can just put you down. Maybe you can figure it out and come back later. But right now we can't afford to let you figure it out against major league pitching because we're a good ball team and we didn't expect to be. So maybe if they're 10 games under 500, Vargas and Arcia are up here playing every day, taking their lumps, which maybe you're not doing when you're, you know, leading the American League Central. I don't know.
Why are they letting Santana do it then?
Yeah, so I mean, it's confusing he plays shortstop. Every way you look at it.
Because he plays shortstop, right? Is the only thing, and they don't have anything else at that position?
Well, yeah, and they pretty much committed themselves to him this winter. They don't really have any other options. What else are they going to do at shortstop?
Yeah, I think they've kind of painted themselves into a corner. But at least with Santana, he plays a decent defense. You can bury him in the number 9 hole and let him. That quote is filled. Learning on the job, we can have one, and that quote is filled. I mean, he's not a corner outfielder. He's not a DH guy you're looking for some power and some run production from. So Santana's a little bit of a different story. You know, I wanted to just say one thing on Nolasco quick. You know, Eric, from the beginning of that game, I know he came out in the second inning, but even in the first inning and in the beginning of the second inning before the first visit by the trainer, he just looked really off. They were hitting him hard. He wasn't fooling anybody. His stuff looked even slow to me. So I think we're going to have another development on this Nolasco situation. I know they're saying it's an ankle. Maybe it is an ankle. Maybe I think there's just there's going to be a stay on the DL here for Ricky Nolasco, and might be more than 15 days if the Twins keep winning.
Well, I mean, yeah, they certainly get to backdate it. It's retroactive, and so if he's really just minorly hurt or minorly injured, you know, it's one start here or there. But yeah, I don't know that all the roster management, you know, going back to giving arbitration to Nunez in the first place, which we talked to death about this winter, it's been a lot of confusing moves. I mean, it's not as confusing, you know, as getting the old band back together and bringing back Kubel. But it's just been some interesting moves. I don't know. One thing that I did see when I was at the ballpark, and take this for what it's worth, but as much as we have ripped Torii Hunter and ripped that signing, it seems
as much as you have ripped Torii Hunter and ripped that signing.
Well, everyone not named Jay Korn has ripped it on this podcast. I think.
I don't think Paul was that anti Torii Hunter signing. I think his quote was "There's no such thing as a bad 1 year deal."
I think that I was adamantly against Torii Hunter signing, especially after that press conference. The way he handled himself. Jay, you're definitely wrong. I mean, there is no such thing as a bad one-year deal, but when you give a guy $10.5 million when guys like Nori Aoki went late in the offseason for half of that amount, and he's having a heck of a season for the Giants right now. So, I mean, you're right. There's no such thing as a bad one-year deal. And offensively, Torii Hunter has been a big part of this Twins team scoring runs when they need to scoring runs and seemingly always having at least one more than the opponent, but I was definitely against the signing. And I'll still lament the way he plays defense out there. And thankfully, we've got Eddie Rosario up. It kind of allowed to take some of that pressure off him because you got a guy out there in left field and center field with Aaron Hicks now, who both both those guys are plus defenders, you don't have to see that glaring defense in right field from Torrey Hunter because Hicks and Rosario can make up for a lot of that.
Well, and I wanted to say, I think those off-the-field contributions that were talked about, what Torrey Hunter brings to a team and what he does in the clubhouse, I think maybe I have downplayed how important that is because we sat very close down the right field line. It seemed like we could reach out and touch Torrey Hunter while he was playing on Sunday. And he was smiling and looking over at Aaron Hicks, and they were smiling, and they ended up winning that game late, coming back and doing that. And they did that little three-way outfielder jump and touch their butts together move that they like to do. You know, and it seemed like he was bringing energy to that club. You know, and they got, you've probably seen it in the blogs or heard about it. They got the Twins dance parties going on in the clubhouse. They got fog machines and laser lights and all kinds of shit in there when they win games. And, you know, winning helps a lot of that. But this team is having fun, and it seems like they're coming together in ways that you didn't see the last couple of years when the leader of your ball club was, you know, just a lead by example, get the job done, keep your mouth shut kind of guy. And, you know, maybe this is what they need, especially because they have so many, they're not so young for baseball players, but they're young for young men. You know, they need to go out there and have fun and have some swagger and, you know, win or lose. Torrey Hunter has been through it all. It sounds like a lot of guys give him credit early on when this team was 1-6 for kind of saying, hey, don't worry about it, it's just a short skid, that kind of thing. So, you know, a lot to be said for that. So I think it's paying dividends, and Torrey Hunter has been the offensive threat that we thought he would be. He's been very consistent, and that's what he's always been. So no harm there. I did think one thing defensively, I thought it was funny, and I don't know that you maybe see this on TV all the time if you're not watching Torrey Hunter when a ball comes at him. A lot of balls got hit over his head on Sunday, and on every one of them, he does that thing where the outfielder pretends like he's going to make the catch before all of a sudden he turns around and catches it off the wall or it's a home run. Every ball that went over Hunter's head, and there were three of them on Sunday, he did the thing where they pretend like they're going to catch it and then don't.
Yeah, I heard an interview with Lavelli Neal too, talking about now that Hicks has been back up, that he and Hunter are pretty much, you know, attached at the hip, that Torrey tells Aaron when he needs to be at the stadium, and they're watching film together, they're watching, you know, they're scouting the pitchers together, and they're working out together, you know, on the off days and doing a lot of stuff that, I mean, some of that stuff you were talking about and being able to see on the field, Eric, but it sounds like they're sticking pretty close to one another off the field as well, which is good. Now that Hicks had that time down in Rochester, he's up here. Like we talked about last week, you know, his offense isn't, you know, to anything to write home about, but he's doing enough defensively and helping out there in those defensive situations where we at least have a true defensive center fielder out there that can make some of the plays that we need him to make, so that things are moving in that right path.
Yeah, and he hasn't looked totally lost against right-handed pitching. I mean, that was one of the big knocks against him, especially last year when you saw he gave up switch hitting, then he went back, then he gave it up, then he went back. You know, he just struggled so much against right-handed pitching from the left side of the plate. And this year, while he's not doing fantastic, he's just not awful against right-handed pitching. And if Aaron Hicks can be not awful against right-handed pitching, do his regular way, have a little bit more power against lefties when he's batting from the right side, and play that good defense. And we talked last week that his defense has maybe saved the Twins a couple of games here late.
That's right.
The last couple of weeks.
Definitely.
You know, that's all you need from your center fielder. And if he can be a little bit more consistent offensively, even if he has to shift to a corner spot in the next year, if he's starting to figure this out, That's a great thing of signs to come, and you might still have a spot on this ball club with the arrival of Mr. Buxton in 12 to 18 months.
Who is this Buxton you speak of? I've never heard of him.
It's Brixton's dad. You might know him.
Oh, Brixton's dad. Yeah, okay.
You know, Hicks has been aggressive on the base paths, too, and smart. Last year and the last 2 years, you know, you've seen him get picked off. You've seen him get thrown out of third, stupid shit like that. You know, this year I think he's got a steal or two, maybe thrown out once. But smart, you know, safe base path play from Hicks as well so far.
So we've seen Hicks has come and done some good things the last couple of weeks. You know, and right before Hicks came up, Eddie Rosario came up. And Eddie Rosario had that big home run, right? Everyone remembers that. First pitch of his major league career, he hits a home run. His parents went nuts. Everyone at the stadium went nuts. Then he kind of went in a little bit of a slump after that and didn't do much of anything for the next 2 weeks. And then he's kind of leveled out a little bit. He's still not taking any walks, but if we look up today, here's a guy that's hitting, you know, what's he hitting? 302 with a 318 on base and a 413 slugging in his first 67 plate appearances of his major league career. And some of this is a Danny Santana unsustainable BABIP related thing, as we saw last year. Rosario has a 415 BABIP. He's a fast guy, but he's not Billy Hamilton fast, and he's not going to be a 415 BABIP guy going forward. But, you know, he's also striking out 31% of the time. So those numbers are going to regress a little bit. I would imagine that he finds himself back in Rochester before the season is over. And once this kind of hot streak that he's on dies down, he might be the guy that eventually gets swapped out with Arcia when he's healthy, or Vargas when the Twins decide to bring him back. But he has had a nice couple of weeks here, and I think that he's certainly learning a lot and getting his, you know, first major league taste. But I've been really impressed with his speed. He's got 4 stolen bases. He stole a base today. He looks a lot faster than I thought he was. And I knew he had played center fielder before. I knew he was athletic because they tried to move him to second base. So he has a lot of baseball skills, but he's much more of an athlete than the guy that I thought was coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said there, Eric. I think, you know, where there are obviously some things for him to still work on. I mean, he's not drawn a ton of walks. I mean, that batting average is pretty high, so that's nice to see. Like we talked about earlier in the show, it's just nice, too, to have him out there and be a guy that's at least passable defensively in one of the corner outfield spots to go along with Hicks in center, so that Hicks doesn't feel like he has to cover all the ground in between two bricks that are in the different corner outfield spots when they had the likes of Arcia out there in between and Hunter on the other side. So it's nice to have him out there for those purposes. It's nice, yeah, for the speed factor that he can add. Even though the Twins aren't doing a ton of running. I mean, I know some of that has been the bats have been a little bit cold lately, but they haven't been stealing as much as I thought they would, I guess, going into the Paul Molitor era here. I think that was one thing we had talked about at the beginning of the season, was just that we thought the Twins might do a little bit more running with the way the lineup had the possibility of being constructed.
Yeah, Rosario's tied for the team lead right now with those 4 stolen bases.
Yeah, so that,
and Hicks, who's been up, you know, one game less essentially, or 2 games less, he also has 4. So
it's the young guns coming in, yeah, stealing they're bases, moving around taking names
a little bit, but yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I would have thought, you know, that we would have seen more from the likes of Dozier, but I mean, he hasn't been getting on base you know, as much maybe. I mean, that batting average is always so low for him that impacts some of his ability when he's getting on. And he's, you know, he's hitting a decent amount of home runs too. So you don't get to, they don't let you steal bases if you hit the ball out of the park for some reason.
Well, yeah. And I mean, We've seen Dozier do that. It seems like he is really gearing up for these extra base hits. What did we say? Last week he had 5 hits on the week and 4 of them for extra bases.
Something crazy like that, yeah.
You know, he's hitting the ball hard. I think this week he did something very similar. You know, he didn't hit any home runs today, but he had a couple of ringing doubles.
He did hit
doubles.
One. He did hit
oh,
one
did he
today.
Hit one in the first game?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, because that was his 10th home run of the year, and he became the first twin second baseman to hit double-digit home runs in 3 straight seasons. And Knobloch and some other guy from before I was born had done it as well. So he kind of set a neat little record for him anyway, I'm sure. But it's nice. I mean, he's at that 10. We saw a hot beginning of the season for him. Last year he had that tear, got him in the home run derby in front of the Target Field. It'd be nice to see him sustain this power level throughout a whole season and see where he could end up with those numbers by year's end.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's on a, 33 home run pace or something like that? If he continues doing what he's doing for a whole season. And, you know, 30 home run hitters are not something the Twins have had. And so he's certainly been good. And like you said, that batting average is low, but he's still getting on base essentially a third of the time. He walks a lot. And so pitchers are at least respecting him a little bit. They're not throwing him fastballs because this is a guy that knows what to do with fastballs. You know, he's quick enough. He turns around, hits everything to left field, right? I mean, I think he has, over the last 2 years, one home run that wasn't just right straight down that left field line. So, I mean, he's going to pull the ball, and he seems to be working for him. And it seems like pitchers haven't figured out a way yet to stop him from doing that. It's come in streaks a little bit, but he's always been able to make the right adjustment and get back to what he's doing. So pretty encouraging things we're seeing from Brian Dozier.
Yeah.
And all of that, I said this, the Twins are like 11 games over. All of a sudden, the month of May for the Twins was their best month since they were World Series champions in 1991. So the Twins won 91, they won 20 wins in a month. And they did the same thing here in 2015. It's so many wins. The Twins were so hot. You know, they didn't. I don't think they ever lost 2 games in a row in May. It was just unbelievable that the bats were working. Even when pitching worked a lot of times, but when it didn't, the bats got them one more run than they needed.
Yeah,
you know, they won a lot of those 6-5 games, things like that.
I felt like that is what the whole month was winning. Winning games by 1 or 2 runs. I know there were some, obviously, that weren't that. But that was the feeling I was getting, was we were getting decent pitching from our starters. Our bullpen was lights out for the most of the month. I that's really what I chalk it up to anyway.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think even on the season, the Twins have a plus 19 run differential.
Yeah.
Crazy. Which is, the Royals have a plus 48. and they're winning a buttload of games. Even the Blue Jays, who are 5 games under, they have a plus 35. The Yankees have a plus 19. You know, they're just 4 games over. So certainly when the Twins have won, you look, they won 10 more games than they lost, and they've only scored 19 more runs than their opponents. So, you know, that looks like a team that's winning a lot of close games, or at least when they're getting blown out, it's when they're on the losing side of an effort. So, you know, this team is continuing to score runs. They still look like that same offensive team they surprisingly were last year, but they've gotten just enough pitching and timely hitting. I think Aaron Gleeman mentioned on Gleeman and the Geek not recently, and it came from, I think, Jonah Carey, but the Twins are bunching their hits together. When you bunch your hits together, all of a sudden 7 singles could be, you know, 6 runs versus 7 hits spread out over 5 innings or something that amounts to a hill of beans. So they're scoring runs in bunches when they need to and getting just enough done to win some baseball games. So
a lot of crooked numbers, right?
Yeah, a lot of crooked numbers. It seems like they never feel like that they're out of a game in the clubhouse or in the dugout. Maybe as fans, we, after 4 years of all these losing games, we feel like they're out of a game, but it seems like the Twins chip away. They have a, you know, 2 or 3 run inning, they get right back into something, all of a sudden you're down by a run, and you know, that bullpen has done very well. Glenn Perkins had the one loss earlier this week, but outside of that, I think, as Jay loves to say, he's leading the league in saves, and the Twins are putting him in position with all these close games to rack up plenty of saves.
I was just going to turn to the pitching staff a little bit real quick before we move on to some other stuff. But, you know, I'm real excited. We'll probably talk more about it next week when it's a little closer. But Irvin Santana's return is nigh. And this isn't, you know, like we were talking a little last week, this isn't a middle of the rotation, this isn't a number 4 starter, this isn't some just extra piece or a spare part. I mean, this is a legitimate number 1 ace. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch how everything plays out. But with all these problems we're dealing with now with this roster situation and the Lasco and all that, it's going to get even more complicated in just, what is it, like 8, 10 days, 11 days or something like that? I mean, it's close. Hello? Nothing? Huh?
It's isn't it the beginning of July? So it's a little bit longer than 10, 11 days. We're like a month away. He's just getting ramped up in extended spring training. But yeah, I mean, really, that's only what, maybe 5 more trips through the rotation, depending on how things work out, get some off days in there. So we're getting close. We're going to, you know, hopefully... I mean,
I thought it was 60 days. I thought it was a 60-day suspension.
80 yeah. Games.
It's 80.
Yeah. So it's a little bit longer, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely an upgrade, especially if we're looking at the Twins, even if they're, you know, not having, if they're not the team with the best record in the American League when he jumps in, it's still an upgrade, obviously.
Do you guys think that creates tension at all? I mean, do you think that could have do you think it could be a negative in any way, or could it only be, I mean, you know, a positive both on the field and in the clubhouse? I mean, I just can't, you know, it's like a guy coming in the middle of the season that you got traded or something. You know, it's kind of like a stranger, you know, it takes a while to get used to him. But I do think Santana's going to come back mad and with something to prove and go out there and dominate.
I think they're used to new guys being in the clubhouse just from, like you said, trades that happen periodically, or just, you know, as guys get called up, no matter what level you're playing at, you're always playing with guys that you might not know at that well, you know, like guys that, oh, this guy just joined the organization this year and he's playing at double A or triple A, and you're moving between high A, double A, back down to high A to low A, up to triple A, you know? So I think they get used to moving around and being with guys that they aren't as familiar with. I mean, they probably have a core group of friends within any team. But, I mean, look at our bullpen. We have pieces out there that weren't with this team. Aaron Thompson, Blaine Boyer. I mean, these guys, they weren't with our – even in our organization half a year ago. So they figure it out.
Well, and plus – Santana is a known quantity. I mean, he was there all of spring training, and essentially that's a month of guys just hanging out, playing baseball, getting to know one another. You know, so he's a guy that they know. All the catchers, you know him. They know what he throws. They know who he is. They know what his clubhouse presence is going to be like. And, you know, any he's bitterness or resentment that they may have had related to his, you know, suspension, I think goes away with the winning. You know, they're going to be excited to get him back and get his talent back in that rotation and in that clubhouse. And if the Twins are still 10 games over 500 in early July, holy cow, look out. You know, all of a sudden now that becomes a real weapon in the second half. And if the Twins can just, you know, coast and hang out where they are, we're going to be seeing 162 exciting baseball games this year.
Yes, coasting is what the Twins are going to do.
Well, I mean, I still am waiting for the other shoe to drop. You know, Cinderella is going to lose her slipper eventually.
Yeah.
That's why I'm saying coasting isn't going to happen.
I thought we might see it here in Boston. They lost those first two games. They weren't scoring any runs with the weather and the travel. And, you know, I mean, you know, they're away from home now after, you know, the home cooking no longer. But then May goes out and puts the stop in there tonight. But I think you're right, Eric. I think we could, you know, if they go and lose four out of, or if they go and win four out of their next 10, I mean, I think we need to be okay with that kind of stretch.
Yeah. I mean, something will happen, but I think certainly when Santana comes back, it will be a boost. It'll be, you know, a welcome addition, even if it does create some dissension among that pitching staff. Because we've already talked about how the Twins have plenty of pitching and plenty of guys performing well. So barring some type of major injury to not just one but two guys, somebody will lose a job when Santana comes back. And maybe it's a starter going to the bullpen and a bullpen guy going to AAA or getting, you know, released altogether. Somebody loses a job when that happens. So
what about a six-man rotation? We've seen that, and I think the Mets have a six-man rotation now, and I think there's maybe another team that either did or is talking about it. Could the Twins go to a six-man rotation? That would solve some problems.
Maybe for, like, 2 weeks if there's a doubleheader sprinkled in somewhere, but no team has done that long-term, and it hasn't shown to be an effective solution because you're just giving your sixth worst pitcher an opportunity to pitch more than your other five best pitchers.
You look what's happening in New York. They're going to a six-man pitching staff because they've got the arms, and they're waiting for someone to not be good. You know, and the Twins right now, if they're just trying to figure out who to drop, make it a competition. Run them out there every 6 days. Phil Hughes is not – it's not like we're missing starts from Phil Hughes right now, our number one guy. He's not getting it done this season. So maybe some more rest helps him. You look at what happened with a guy like Tanaka and some of the other guys that come up from Japan. Pitching every fifth day is really taxing on them. You Darvish, I mean. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad guy, especially when we've got, you know, guys like Trevor May who – maybe, I don't know, maybe do you take the kid gloves off yet? I think having him pitch every 6 day instead of fifth day in the short term is probably a good thing. So I think that you could probably do it when Santana comes back with the understanding that if someone throws a couple of clunkers, then they're the odd man out real quick. And it also puts you in a situation where if you do have a doubleheader or something, you've already got starters lined up for that.
How do guys need to get stretched out then again if they switch between, you know, if they're only throwing 70 pitches in a start and then having to go back to 100? How taxing do you think that is for them?
Well, I don't know that you only have them throw 70 pitches in a start. I mean, I think the expectation is still that they go out there, you know, and like May did today, threw 98 pitches, I think, and he probably would have liked to go back out there for the eighth inning to throw a few more. So I don't think that you'd be looking to limit guys. You're not really trying to get to your bullpen there. You still want your starters to go out there and give you as many innings as they can.
It's something at least worth talking about. I mean, like Paul said, the reason the Mets did it is because they have the talent. It's not like you're throwing your worst pitcher out there, Eric. I mean, that's six, you know, legitimate major league, arms that are in your organization, and I like the competition angle. I don't know. I mean, it could get creative. I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, something will happen. But speaking of just talking about it, it seems like the Twins might be talking about an extension with Torii Hunter, which rubs me maybe the wrong way. I don't get excited about a Hunter extension. I don't know about you guys, but 1 year of Torii Hunter is plenty for me.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing to get excited about here. I mean, there's guys down in the minor leagues right now in the outfield that are coming up. I mean, look at what's going on at AA. There's guys down there that are going to be ready to come up within the next year, year and a half. And so I don't know why you signed Torii Hunter to any kind of extension. Maybe if you can get a great team-friendly deal, like he'll come back next season and play for $5 million, take a 50% pay cut, maybe there'd be some value in keeping him around. But unless Oswaldo Arcia never comes back and just can't figure out how to hit the ball and be more patient at the plate, maybe then, because then you just can't afford to have an outfield out there where you're running out both Oswaldo Arcia and Torii Hunter on a regular basis. That's not going to work. And we've we've seen that terrible defense. We saw it the first couple weeks of the season. I mean, so I would not be excited in any way about a Torrey Hunter extension unless it was way, very, very team friendly.
I mean, I think that's what you'd be looking at, though. I think you'd be looking at $5-6 million, $4-6 million, you know, 2 years, $8 million, something like that. And I think it makes all the sense in the world. I mean, he doesn't have to start. He doesn't have to play every day. He plays a couple days a week. We've talked about what he's done with Hicks. He sells a lot of jerseys. He's great with the fans. He can be out there on promotional events, and you can give away his jersey, all kinds of things.
Why would he take less money, though? He's performing. He's
41 years old. That's why. And he wants to stay here. And I don't know if there's very many other teams that are going to go pay a 41-year-old Torrey Hunter $8 or $9 million. I just don't see
it. He'll find a way, if he keeps up what he's doing, to make $10 million next year. Because he's going to be a guy that's worth it. I mean,
It's the Tim Wakefield thing in Boston. He just, you know, you come back on the same contract until you're not performing. And they say, okay, now you have a job in the front office.
Yeah, you certainly could be okay to give him an extra year or say, you know, we'll wait till the offseason. Well, then we'll give you another year this winter. We'll give you another year next winter. If you continue to hit, you know, 290 and you hit 15-ish home runs and you get on base and you're an exciting guy in the clubhouse, $10 million is okay. But we don't need to give you $10 million today. We can give you the same $10 million in December.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree with that. Let's see how his durability holds out over the course of the full season. Let's see how the Twins wind up finishing. I mean, I'm not saying give it to him today either. I'd like a little larger sample size, of course. But if it gets to the point, you know, either in the off season or later in the season, and Torrey's proven he's worth it, why not sign him for, you know, 2 years, $13 million, something like that? I mean, why not?
Well, yeah, I mean, but you're absolutely right. It can't be too early because I think the Twins are getting bit in the ass right now about, you know, they were a little bit too eager to extend Kurt Suzuki a year ago. And Kurt Suzuki floundered in the second half last year, and he looks more like the career Kurt Suzuki this year than he looked like the Kurt Suzuki the Twins signed to a 3-year extension. And so
I don't think that that's such a bad move. I mean, obviously, no one expected him to continue to be first-half Kurt Suzuki from last season. But when you listen to the way the pitching staff, when the pitchers, the way they talk about Kurt Suzuki, it makes me less hesitant to say the Twins made a mistake there because it sounds like everybody loves throwing to Kurt Suzuki. They love the way he calls a game. They love his preparation. I mean, you just don't see guys shaking him off at all. I mean, I think the way he handles the pitching staff, and he's throwing out runners this year, and I don't think that's something that's going to continue to happen at the rate it's happening, but he's getting it done. And he's maybe not a great pitch framer, but a game caller, the signal caller behind the plate. I mean, the more I watch Kurt Suzuki and the more Twins games I get to watch with him behind the dish, the more impressed I am with the way he handles the pitching staff.
Kurt Suzuki enjoys spearfishing octopus off the Hawaiian Islands during the offseason.
He sure does. That's the fact. That's the Kurt Suzuki fact up on the scoreboard.
That's right.
Hey, but Paul, I want to just, the only time that pitchers don't love a catcher is when it's Josmil Pinto, right? That's the only time I've ever seen pitchers throw a catcher under the bus for his game calling or his receiving. And every other team, if whoever your starting catcher is, that's the guy that the guy there is say, well, I like throwing to this guy. And I have success. I like what he does, especially if it's a veteran guy who has been around the league and caught a lot of guys and, you know, comes in and does the job right. We heard the same thing when guys were throwing to Drew Butera, right? Drew Butera, at least, was an excellent defensive catcher. And guys said, I just like throwing to
Drew. Eric, here's my question, though. Okay, here's my question. You don't like Kurt Suzuki. Who do we got? You want to run Chris Herrmann out there 5 days a week?
I'm not saying that there's not other options. I'm just saying the Twins are getting a little bit bit by signing that 3-year extension for Suzuki. I mean,
and I don't know that they are because there's no one else in the system that's ready to come up and take those everyday duties. And maybe
But that doesn't mean they couldn't go out. They couldn't have went out and got someone.
Who's been available? There's not like decent catchers grow on trees.
They did go out and get someone. They went out and got Suzuki. and we're trying to tell you that it was in retrospect, it actually is a good, and they haven't been bitten at all. I mean, you're using Suzuki as your prime example for jumping too early and getting bit on pulling the trigger too soon, but Suzuki's worked out great.
230,
303, 319. From a catcher? I don't know. Someone should look up what the average offensive line for a catcher is this season.
From a catcher who's not good defensively.
I don't think he's bad defensively. His pitch framing is maybe not at the top of the league, but I think pitch framing numbers in general are way overinflated. I think that he does a fine job behind the plate. He's not great, but he's not terrible. I mean, to make it all the way to the major leagues as a catcher, you can't be terrible. So I don't know that being a bad defensive catcher that you're labeling Kurt Suzuki is considerably worse than a good defensive catcher. I don't think you're giving up a lot there. And for him to be hitting just a little bit below league average, I'm happy with that. I'll take that.
I don't know. I'm not saying Kurt Suzuki is wrong, and certainly they're only paying him $6 million this year, next
That's
year,
exactly
and then he has
what
a
you're
vesting
saying.
Option.
You're saying they're snake bitten, so you're saying you don't agree with the
signing?
I'm
saying they bought
deal.
High on Kurt Suzuki. They gave him a 3-year extension or a 2-year extension with a vesting option when he had a spectacular first half. And so I said, don't do the same thing with Torii Hunter. Don't just buy into what he does in a half of a year and then give the guy 3 years, because you're going to be able to just string a guy along. That's what I'm saying.
I think they looked within their system and knew that Josemil Pinto was not going to be the answer and that they didn't have anything else. And they didn't want, if they would have let Suzuki even go in further into the second half last year, he would have been, you know, he would have been say, well, I'm going to go out and try and test free agency because, you know, the Athletics might want me back. The Nationals might want me back. Someone like that that's going to be a contender might want me to be maybe not their everyday catcher, but at least part of a team that's going to be winning this year. And I think the Twins wanted to get ahead of that. And they saw that catcher was a hole in the organization. And so they went out and wanted to have Suzuki, you know, for some probably some of the same reasons we talked about with Torii Hunter, just to be that, be a good someone that can work with the pitching staff, someone that has a good rapport with the team and in the locker room, and just be a veteran presence. So I think that's what they were thinking. And yeah, they might have overpaid. They possibly overpaid or whatever, but. When we look back on it, as he's aging over these next couple of years, we'll probably say, you know, maybe the end of the deal isn't that great, but I they needed something here to be a stopgap to some of those guys that are the younger catchers in the system, and I think Suzuki fits what they were looking for at the time.
You know what I think? I think Eric should be the new catcher. I nominate Eric for catching duties on the Minnesota Twins Baseball Club.
Sure, I'll play for the league minimum.
League minimum, baby, yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like we're off the rails a little bit here. I wanted to talk because the Major League Draft is happening on Monday, or it begins on Monday, spreads into Tuesday and Wednesday, I believe. And next week, we're going to have a draft recap. We're going to bring on Jeremy Nygaard and kind of talk about what the Twins did, you know, not just in the first round, which is where all the talk is right now, but what do they do in the second round, third round, eighth round, 15th round? Who are some of the guys that you never heard of? What do they mean? In the last couple of years, we have seen the Twins go away from what they used to just always draft the best high school player, it seems like. They used to love going after a toolsy high school player. You know, that's Aaron Hicks, that's Byron Buxton. But the last couple of drafts, they've always gone for best talent available at the top. But then they've gone hard after velocity, and where the Twins have been finding velocity from arms has been college pitcher. And so that's how you've seen guys like Ryan Eads in the organization, you know, and he's not lived up to what maybe the Twins thought they were getting, but they draft a bunch of relievers. You got Nick Birdie, has a lot of velocity there, big velo. You know, but he's just a reliever. And so the Twins are hoping some of these guys can be starters. Some of the guys maybe will fail as starters and then be in the bullpen. And so what the Twins do, I think, not only at number six next week, but what they do with the rest of their draft will kind of give an idea of if they're still looking to find velocity any way they can and trying to get some college arms, or, you know, if they're starting to go in a different direction totally.
How much influence over a major league draft does the major league manager have? How much is Paul Molitor involved in the organization's drafting process? Like zero, right?
I would say zero, yeah.
I would hope it's zero. I mean, he maybe doesn't even know who guys are, right? Because it doesn't matter. It's going to be 4 years before he sees any of them. So, I mean, and, you know, the Twins are just looking get the best talent into the organization. And so if we kind of look at the top of that first round, some of the names that are out there, there's probably three big high school arms or guys that are out there, not necessarily arms. No high school pitchers really are at the top of this draft, but we have a shortstop, Brendan Rodgers, who could be one of the top two picks in this draft. And then we have a guy, Kyle Tucker, a high school outfielder, and another high schooler, Daz Cameron. And those guys are probably guys you could see at the top. Cameron is probably a guy who's not going to be in play for the Twins at six. He's probably not that highly rated, but a guy that could potentially be up there. As far as college guys go, maybe one of the top guys in the draft right now, Kyle McDaniel has him going number one in the most recent mock draft, is Dansby Swanson, who's a college shortstop. Then other guys that you might look at for the Twins here at the top of this draft, Alex Bregman, another college shortstop. I think a guy that the Twins have been connected to, in the past. Carson Fulmer, Tyler Jay, and Dylan Tate. These are all pitchers. So we've got a couple of righties in Fulmer and Tate, and then a lefty in Tyler Jay. So there's a lot of talent out there. And then the Twins, they might be willing to, if Brady Aiken falls, and you remember Brady Aiken was 1-1 last year, number one guy overall. He did have the Tommy John surgery this past spring, which was the Astros' fear all along last year, or their supposed fear, with that abnormal ligament that they saw in the medicals. But Aiken could be a guy that has 1-1 talent, and if he gets to the Twins at six, you'd hope the Twins wouldn't be afraid to go after him. We saw the Nationals in the past draft some guys who had Tommy John surgery and were recovering, and with so many pitchers right now getting Tommy John surgeries and getting them young and still being able to come back and have successful major league careers down the road, don't necessarily need to be so afraid of that happening right now. And if you can get that talent, get that upside, certainly that's what you have to be looking to hit the home run with that first round pick.
Yeah, and I think this year it's also going to be important because the Twins, with the talent coming through the system, might not get another pick in the top 10. Things go anywhere near according to plan, this could be their last top 10 pick for a while.
And I think a story came out this week that the Twins would be willing to quote-unquote roll the dice if the right player is available to them in the draft. So that could be someone, like an Aiken. I think a lot of the mock drafts don't have Aiken going in the top 10. Most of them have him going later in the late teens, or not even then, into the 20s somewhere, where a team would be willing to take that take on that risk with him. But I mean, if the Twins have had a look at his medicals and feel like they're fine with them, I mean, I'm sure it's tough looking at that elbow you know, since he's rehabbing and working his way back. But it might be a guy. I mean, if you can get the guy that was the number one pick and was considered to be a top end talent, and you get him outside of the top five, even that's that might be something that the Twins are considering. And you know, maybe it's something they're keeping. You know, maybe some of the guys they're looking at, they want to keep a little on the down low, you know, so that other teams ahead of them aren't trying to consider those same guys as well. I mean, we saw the Angels do that with Mike Trout. They stopped sending scouts to Mike Trout's game because they knew they wanted him, and they couldn't believe that he fell to him at the whatever crazy pick it was, 20-something in that draft, where they got stole Mike Trout out from everyone. So. Who knows? We'll see. It's always fun. I think what we're seeing with this draft this year is, I mean, there's not like the year Buxton was drafted and the year some of these other guys were drafted. There's not, there's a lot of question about some of the top tier guys, like who should be that number one pick? What are the teams going to do at the top? There's no clear stud in this draft. So, I think draft night, this will be one of the most exciting ones in recent memories, because I think a lot can happen on this night where some teams might come in and surprise a little, and there could be some guys that are taken that might be considered reaches at the time, but it might be, you know, what those teams are considering the best available talent.
Oh, and don't forget, Derek Jeter was drafted 6th overall. How about that?
Yes.
Barry Bonds drafted 6th overall.
Yes. There you go. Hall of Famer. We're getting one.
Probably. I mean,
didn't if you yeah. can.
Zach Greinke was 6th overall. I mean, I'm just looking down a random list here. But there's been a lot of good players that come out of that, you know, area. I don't think the Twins that this draft is the one that produces the next great number 6 guy, but it could happen.
Yeah, I don't think that the talent is there in this one, but didn't Seth do a story, or someone at Twins Daily did a story on that, on how the 6th pick has created the second most war over besides the number 1 pick, so... We're getting a good player. Let's do it.
Market. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about some other good players. We've got the pitcher and hitter of the week coming up here. The Twins have had another pretty good week. They did lose the back-to-back games to Boston, but outside of that, they had a very positive week, and we had some strong pitching performances. If we're going to go ahead and include what the Twins did today, Trevor May certainly is in the running for Pitcher of the Week, and you know, throw in some of that Dozier had a home run and a double today, so it makes his stats look a lot better. So, Cody, why don't you tell us a little bit about who are we looking at this week?
Yeah, so all these numbers we're running through were coming into today's games. So for Pitcher of the Week, we got Pelfrey through that great outing, those 7 innings. One earned run, still ended up taking the loss, even with the one earned run, only struck out one, had a couple walks. The rest of the guys, that were impressive, were all bullpen guys. Casey Fien, pitched 3 innings, didn't give up any runs, struck out 4, didn't walk any. Graham, had 3 innings, struck out 4 and walked 1, and Presley, threw 3 innings, struck out 3 and walked 1. And if we want to toss May's performance in there from tonight, he had a ton of strikeouts and matched Pelfrey for that innings load. So he's definitely in the discussion as well. Do we have any votes? Anybody leaning one way or the other?
I think this one is pretty easy for me, and I got to give it to Trevor May. Until Trevor came out today, I think for me it was firmly locked in on Mike Pelfrey, who had a masterful game yesterday until the 7th inning there when he left a splitter. He said it was a splitter that didn't split, that he left up to Bogarts, who almost hit it out to dead center for a home run, ended up being a double off the wall. Then another hit ended up scoring that one. So that was, but other than that, he was, it seemed like all day he was just locked in, doing fantastic. Only gave up two extra base hits and a very impressive performance from Mike Pelfrey. But what Trevor May did this afternoon was just fantastic. And this is the second time in this season we've seen Trevor May just kind of reach that other level, kind of realizing all the potential that we've been waiting for as Twins fans since he was acquired. So, I mean, this, for me, it's easy, Trevor May.
Yeah, I'm also going to go with May, and the only thing I have to add is the control that we saw out of May today. I mean, he was in and out, painting corners and hitting his spots. He was had total command of his fastball, like I've never seen Trevor May have. I mean, it was his go-to pitch. He probably threw it 75-80% of the time. He was fearless, and you're going up against guys like Ortiz and Pedroia, Sandoval, and he did not. I don't think Sandoval played tonight, but he did not back down. He did not look intimidated. And this is, you know, first time in Fenway Park, the whole bit. Trevor May has my vote.
Yeah, yeah. May was very impressive tonight. And nothing that's happened the rest of this week can take that away from him. I mean, 7 innings, 9 strikeouts, that's going to win Pitcher of the Week every week here on Talk to Contact. The only way he could do better is if he would have squeezed in, you know, another start. So, you know, Trevor May, just on the merits, I'm just going to jump right in line with you guys and send it his way.
And he could have gone, he probably could have gone out there 8 or 9. He probably could have gone a complete game tonight. I mean, he looked that strong. I think he was only at 90-something pitches.
Well, Jay, I think maybe a complete game is maybe asking a little bit too much for him. He was already at 98 pitches. So, you know, he was averaging almost 15 pitches an inning there. Those 7 innings. So,
he could have gone at least one more.
Oh, absolutely. I think that I mean, I would have loved to see him go back out there for the 8th. But Paul Molitor, I think, is managing the bullpen well. I mean, I think we all bemoaned the way Ron Gardenhire handled the bullpen. And I, for one, like what Paul Molitor is doing. As much as I don't like these assigned roles, it's working. And when you've got the hand, guys like Blaine Boyer and Glenn Perkins, you want to get to those guys, and they've been shut down. And so why not hand over the game to those guys, especially in a close game?
Yeah, that's what I was going to key in on, Paul, was just the fact that if they would have had maybe a 6-run lead, maybe they trot him back out there and let him get another inning in. But with the close only 2-run lead, you go to your guns out there in the bullpen that have been been playing very well. So yeah, let's give it a clean sweep and give May the pitcher of the week. So then hopping over to the offensive side of things. Again, these numbers coming into today, and so we can talk a little bit about what some of the guys did in the doubleheader today as well. But Eddie Rosario, he was 5-for-13 this week, hit a home run. So not a lot in the extra base department, but a decent batting average for Mr. Rosario. Hicks, we talked about his defense, but offensively maybe making some small strides in the right direction. Was 4-for-12, scored 4 runs, got walked 3 times, knocked in a couple runs. Maurer led the team in hits. He was 6-for-19, had a double, 3 runs scored, 4 RBIs. Dozier hit that home run earlier in the first game of the doubleheader, but coming into today's games, he was 5-for-18, scored 5 runs, had 3 doubles and a triple. So again, 5 hits for Dozier, 4 of them being for extra bases and scoring some runs. So getting a lot done from the leadoff spot for the Twins. So who we got for votes this week, gentlemen?
Well, I'm just gonna go for Eddie Rosario. I think he's bounced back in a big way. He had that another home run. I think he looks a little bit more comfortable out there. And you know, if Paul's here, and he'll maybe weigh in on this a little bit, but his defensive chops kind of give it to me. That the fielder of the week, that the long lost segment. But he's provided a lot of value there. The stolen base today on top of what he did. So I like Eddie Rosario in a week where no one really stands out, but we have a lot of very solid performances.
Yeah, and just to go on what Eric was saying, and I mentioned it earlier, when you've got both Rosario and Hicks out there, it allows you to make up for that defense that Torrey Hunter gives you out in Rice Field or whoever they're sticking out there. So I think that that's a major advantage because both of those guys just allow you to stretch that defense and help those pitchers out just a little bit. So the fact that Eddie Rosario is also getting it done at the plate this past week, kind of finally starting to see what some of that upside that everyone's been excited about the last couple of years with him. For me, I also will agree with my brother and give it to Eddie Rosario.
Well, I'll go against you guys. I'm going to go with Joe here only because I'm really pleased with the stability that he's really started to provide here in the last four weeks of the season. He's quietly going about his business. And if we're going to put defense in the field, Joe Mauer has played a well above average first base so far this year. I can't think of any glaring mistakes. I like that 6'5" frame he's got over there. I've saved a couple throws. It's made Plouffe look good. So Joe's 6 hits, bunch of RBIs. You know that he's that one threat that the other teams are constantly game planning around Mauer. Allows the guys around him to see better pitches. So I'm real happy with what I've seen out of Joe the last week or two.
Well, I am giving my vote to Dozier, so it's still going to mean Rosario wins. But I just like, again, Dozier does a lot of little things. He's getting around scoring runs, had that home run today, even though it came in a loss. But getting a lot of extra base hits and doing stuff to try and lead this offense in the right direction. Again, that batting average isn't anything to write home about, but still trying to power this offense, trying to get some stuff going. And you gotta love his defense too. So
go ahead. I was just gonna say Joe Mauer definitely wins best beard award though.
Yeah, I was him and Bautista in that Toronto series. I thought they should have had like some kind of beard competition. So yeah, there you go. There you have it. Eddie Rosario gets our talk to contact hitter of the week, and Trevor May takes home his own pitcher of the week honors. All right.
So. Well, gentlemen, here's the thing. We've been talking for almost 90 minutes already. We haven't gotten to anything else. I want to talk about beer before we sign off. So can we do a quick beers from around the world and then shove off until next week? Can we make that happen?
We can make that happen.
Due to I had a beer before. I have no beer. I'm drinking no beer.
No beer. All right. Jay, that's a good quick segment. I love your efficiency. Paul.
I'm out here in Petaluma, California for training, home of Lagunitas Brewing Company. And in their honor, I'm drinking a Lagunitas Pale Ale. They've got a bunch of awesome beers at their tap room. And, I mean, all over. It's now distributed across the nation. They've got a new tap room that just opened up in Chicago. So the Lagunitas Pale Ale, one of their standard beers. It's a delicious pale ale if that's the kind of beer that you like. And if not, I also encourage you to try their little something-something or their little something wild. A lot of good beers by Lagunitas, so enjoy a Lagunitas the next time you're out at the beer store and need something new to whet your palate.
All right, Cody, what do you got?
I am drinking from the Leinenkugel's Brewing Company. There is it, do you say Helles? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's an IPA, right?
It doesn't really say. It says American Helles. It was in their summer little sampler pack that's out right now. It was like $10 at the local beverage store. So you get like some weird fruity ones in there too, but the Helles, yeah, and what's the other? Oh, the Canoe Paddlers in there too were the reason that I wanted to get those two out of the deal, and it was overall a good price. So it's not bad out of the two in there. Yeah, it's one of one that I enjoy more from the Leinenkugel's company.
Sounds pretty good. I do love that Canoe Paddler. That's one of my favorite beers.
I already drank all those there earlier. Nice.
Start with the good stuff. I like it. I like it. Well, I got two different beers tonight. Do you guys ever buy those beers and they're something you never had before and you like them because you feel a little bit adventurous because you're drinking them, but they're not really something you'll ever buy again?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I have tonight. I bought a sampler from Lakefront Brewery in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it was a 12-pack sampler with six different beers in it. So I thought this will serve me pretty well for a few weeks here on the podcast if I can hold myself to one or two beers. And they have a White, which is an organic Belgian-style wheat ale brewed with organic coriander and organic orange peel. And it is not good. But it's certified organic. It's something different, something interesting. I would give it 2 TCs out of a possible 8. So not very good. Also, my friend Alfredo, he came over for dinner the other night and he brought over a sour ale. He's been really getting into these sour beers. And he brought over Love Child number 5 from the Boulevard Brewing Company. I don't know if you guys have ever gotten into sour beers. But they certainly are. This one was very sour. It was like a beer and cider, kind of a mix between the two, but very, very sour. Enjoyable because it was something totally different from what I've ever had before, but I think one bomber of sour ale is enough to last me for the whole summer.
I love sour beers. They're so good. I love when you get the sour fruit beers. One of my favorite beers I've ever had is a sour cherry beer. I love just the typical sour beers, not even the brew one, just the sour beers. I love, they're so good. I love that flavor.
Oh, maybe this is a beer for you. I'll package one up and I'll send it to you. So that's going to do it for us this week on Talk to Contact. As always, rate and review us. Or don't. We don't care. We just want to get more downloads so we can feel cool about ourselves. And then we'll be back next week. We'll recap the draft. We'll have Jeremy Nygaard on. We'll make fun of him for being in Wisconsin. We'll make fun of him and Seth by proxy for their podcast, which they're no longer doing. And we'll probably talk about the Twins, who hopefully are still winning baseball games. So for Cody, Paul, and Jay, I'm Miro Fleiss. This is Talk to Contact. Go Hoyas.